Episode 97, the inspiring story of Janet Sue Wetzel, her principal approach journey.
Welcome to the Principles in Practice podcast. This is where we discuss biblical principles for life and learning. I'm your host, Heather Hall, and this is my co-host,
Brian Hall.
Welcome back to our podcast, everyone. We have our special guest and good friend, Janet Sue Wetzel, with us. And Janet Sue, would you like to tell our audience a little bit about yourself and your background in education?
Yes. First of all, I started out as a mother, and I was raising my two sons to be Christians. And, you know, as it says, to go ye therefore into all the world to preach and teach the gospel and disciple them. Well, I figured out that I shouldn't go out into the world until I took care of home. So I discipled my children at home, but I was married at the time. And so after our marriage stopped or became bad, I guess you could say, anyways, then I started working at a Christian school and teaching my children there in the Christian school, as well as teaching other children, because my son was in the same grade as where I started, which was kindergarten. And I really got a hunger and a thirst for taking care of children in education, because I think that a lot of the problems that adults have start out when they're children. And so let's go back to the root, which I didn't know about the principal approach program then, but that's the principles are, that going back to the root. And so I raised them there, and eventually Youth for the Mission came to my school and my church too at the same time. And because I was praying to God, what should I be doing to take care of my two sons, since I was becoming a single mom. So they accepted me to, Youth of the Mission accepted me to go and be a part of their group. And I went to my discipleship training school. And then on outreach, I went to Asia. And then I went to another place where they had a different school before I could actually stay into the missionary part. Did that in Tyler, Texas. And after that, I found out they had a teacher training school in Tyler, Texas. They had a Christian school for the children. So I ended up raising my children at that Christian school and taught them in the summer. Plus, we went on outreaches every summer. My idea was that they should be involved in missions in order to know what it really felt like, or to understand it as a child, and then whenever they grew up, they could make their own decision. But my desire was that they would, you know, be raised in a Christian form and Christian education. And so they were a blessing to me, that they still are. But whenever my children grew up, and I said to the Lord, as I was praying, that, okay, now I should go look for a regular job and do what regular people do. And it's like I heard this question in my head: don't you care about the other children? Do you just care about your own children? And I thought to myself, no, I care about all the children. But it just seems reasonable that I would go out and, you know, get a regular job and do that. But I was burdened with the idea for all the other children, and that I knew something because I raised my own children this way. So I continued on, and then Jamaica, we already know about that. But anyway, Jamaica, they were asking about that time. It was Jimmy Swaggart's ministry. They had a school in Jamaica, and they were asking for Youth of the Mission teachers to come and take over the property and take over the school, because they were getting rid of the property. So I went up with the rest of the teachers to Pioneer that school, and fell in love with the place, fell in love with the children, fell in love with the atmosphere, even though it was very poor. It was about 2 hours east of Kingston, and it was close to 10 miles from the coast, from the south coast, which is different than the north coast. So I went back there on outreaches every summer, and I taught school in the wintertime until my children were 21, 22 years old. Actually, my oldest was 24. And I asked him, I said, what I think I'm supposed to do is go to this school and start teaching a teacher training school there. I had been trained to do that also for the past 5 years. been working with teachers and also students in the elementary, and they had an elementary school in Jamaica that I had been working with too, and bringing teachers there. And some of the teachers I brought stayed there and worked as well. So I asked my sons, I said, you want to go with me? And they said, no, Mom, we want to see what the rest of the world is like instead of missions. And so I thought, well, they would come later on, but they didn't. They got married and had children here in Texas and stayed here. I stayed in Jamaica for 10 years. And it turned out that people were so excited about education, Christian education, that we did the teacher training school. We had a successful time with our Bethel Christian School there. It was from kindergarten to sixth grade. And then I started having problems with my health. So the people that were there said I should go back to the United States and get it checked out instead of Jamaica, because it's just better here. And so whenever I came back and took care of myself and I went back up there, there was a deal that the government had made with United Nations to take over all the schools, Christians and government schools, all the schools, and to teach them their curriculum. And so I was teaching, Christian curriculum, principal approach, actually. And that wasn't needed anymore. I was still teaching the teachers when I went there, but when they go into the classroom, they couldn't use it. They were using the other curriculum from United Nations, which was a folder. And just, the teachers didn't have to know anything. They just read out of the folder. So it was discouraging to me. The teacher I had worked with in Texas, he still wanted me to come back and help him. So I didn't need to stay there anymore because I couldn't fight the government. I tried actually for a couple of years, but it didn't work. And being that I was a foreigner, I really didn't have much ability to fight. Anyways, and so I went back to Texas and worked with my original teacher with his school, but he died about 3 months later. And so after that, I worked with his wife with the school for another 5 years. And then they decided to close the teacher training school during COVID. And after that, I moved off the base onto regular property, which was the first time in 37 years that I moved off of the mission base. And I just was praying, asking God, should I stop now? And I just thought that the Lord was telling me, you know too much. You need to keep on. You don't need to, you're responsible for what you know. And there's nothing wrong with me physically, overall. So I was asking him, what should I do? And one of my students from the past, they said they needed videos because the other school had been closed down. So they would like to have some videos to remember or help them to brush up on their techniques of principal approach. And so I start working on videos. And about that time, I met y'all. And here I am.
Well, how did you end up learning about the principal approach?
I was very interested, as I said before, in Christian education. And my children were at the other school. They learned Abeka, and there was another curriculum that had the word excellent in it. And so during that time, I learned how to teach that curriculum, and I enjoyed it. It was so much better than what I knew of the government curriculum. So whenever I came to Tyler, the school that was there already was a principal approach school. I didn't know anything about principal approach, but once I figured it out, I love the idea of reasoning. You find out the foundation and then you build on that foundation in reasoning, like it says in Isaiah, come let us reason together. And the way it was taught to me, with a lot of history, with seven principles of liberty through each and every subject. And then I had opportunity to actually take it and teach it myself in Jamaica, which is wonderful because you're using the Bible principles for the foundation. You're not using man's principles. And that's the difference, is most government schools are using man's principles, if they're using principles, mm-hmm. to build on. But in the principal approach, we're using the scriptures. We're using foundational scripture for every subject in the school curriculum.
And you were able to help the Jamaicans learn about their providential history and the application of the principles to their nation, right?
Right. I love the idea of God's hand in history. Talking about interesting, it makes history come alive. It's like the continuation of the Bible. And so whenever I told them about America's history, that was wonderful and everything, but they want to know, what about their history. And so we went out on outreaches my class and myself, because I was had a car, and we went to visit different places where we read in the history books that the Moravians came in and the Baptists came in, and that was the main people who discipled and evangelized Jamaica, where the Moravians came on one side of the island, and the other side of the island came the Baptists and the Methodists and the Wesley Holiness Group. So we learned all about what they did. And what they did was they started schools and in their churches, because they were working with slaves, and the white people were the ones who were there from England, and so they were going to the Church of England, and some of the slaves were going to the Church of England, but mostly that was for the Great House people, the people who had the plantations. They had coffee plantations. They had different spices there. They had different fruit plantations and animal plantations there. Oh, yeah, they had sugar galore, sugar cane plantations, and so mostly that was the leaders of the plantations, which were the white people from England that went to the Church of England. But the slaves were left behind most of the time. And so they started when the Moravians came in first, and then the Baptists, and then the Methodists, they came in. They had the idea of starting schools. They used Sunday school, actually, to teach the children, the slaves, how to read. And they taught them how to read the Bible, just like Wycliffe and his group did.
Before we got started, you're telling us about the colors on their flag. You want to explain that again?
Well, first of all, I should say the American flag is really great. And so I believe that the flags should be an example of what God's trying to do in your nation. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I was teaching the children from young about the colors and about the flag and about Pledge Allegiance and patriotism, and that's part of the principal approach, of course, because Paul was a great patriot, and so was Abraham. But when I went to Jamaica, that's the first thing I wanted to do. And that I really do have a love for flags, especially if they have a Christian idea to them. And the Jamaican flag, I found out there's a yellow cross. But it's not the kind of cross we usually experience with Jesus. It's more like a cross it's a different cross. And it's yellow, and it means the sun. It also stands for the Christianity. And then there's the black, which stands for the hardship of the slaves that they went through. And then there's the green. Green is reflection of the island, because everything is green there. You know, the palm trees are green, the grass is green. It's beautiful green there, emerald type green. So it reflects the whole island, and also it tells a little bit about the history when you look at it, God's hand in history.
I was going to say the green then, with all of the abundance on the island, is like a nod to God's providence in that way as well.
Yeah. And because they didn't go to a desert. They went to a very flourishing, I mean, I had fruit trees growing up in my front yard, and I didn't plant them. They just came up.
So the yellow cross is at an angle versus straight up and down like we're accustomed to, but it still represents the cross that Jesus died on.
It means the Christianity, yes.
Yeah.
And of course it has a sun. The yellow color is the sun, and it stands for the brightness of the Lord as well as the brightness of the sun. They have a fantastic hymn that they sing to as a patriotic song to their flag or for their nation too. So patriotism is really interesting, because you have to do something to show that you're a citizen of the nation you're in. And if you grew up in that nation, one of the things you can do is give honor to a flag, you know, and sing a hymn to the flag to prove that this is your citizenship. And of course, I wasn't a citizen there. I was just a visitor type person there. I was going to become a citizen, but because things changed, it didn't work out. But anyways, so it's very important to be able to teach our children, and adults too, to be patriotic and to have a flag to do that with.
And then wrapping back around to teaching in the school and about Jamaica's providential history, and then the acknowledgement of slavery in their history, which is depicted on their flag. Mm-hmm. We were talking before we started recording, and you were sharing about how once the slaves had started to learn how to read, especially mm-hmm. the Bible, that mm-hmm. that started to give them hope, and then their nation started to change and turn away from slavery. Would you share about that?
Well, they were praying. They were praying and made up songs about their love for the Lord. And they used those songs, and they prayed frequently, easily, actually, as they were out in the fields working with the plantations. And as they were reading the Bible, they found that they were made in the image of God. They didn't know that before, because they were considered animals. They were considered part of the livestock, and they were treated that way. But they found out from the scriptures that they were made in the image of God. And that's what the Moravians really show them, and also the Baptists and the Methodists. And so if they were made in the image of God, it's just like our Constitution says in the United States, that, you know, that therefore they decided that they were just as valuable as their as a people who they were working for. They were, the slave owners were just as valuable as they were. And so they start questioning that, and they questioned it into the point that the landowners, they started coming down very hard on the slaves, so they would not question it. And actually, the people, the slaves, they weren't not character. They didn't have a strong character in Christianity. They were just learning about God, and they start rebelling, and then they start rising up against the plantation owners. But eventually, they, the leaders of the slaves, the ones who were trying to show them that God's love and God's care for them, they continually tried to show them, you know, this is not the way to get liberty, but the way to get liberty is to do it patiently and to do it without killing. It didn't happen that way. There was several times that they rose up, but when they finally were educated well enough, when they finally saw that the wars and the killing was not going to work, they start clinging to the Lord more. So they went through a rough time before they actually start really trusting God for their freedom. And they prayed. And in England, they were working hard to make slavery become illegal. And eventually, I tell you the truth, they loved Abraham Lincoln there as one of their heroes. Not officially, but unofficially, it is, because it's American. He's one of their heroes. They love that he stood up for them. And so there were other slaves that, well, not slaves, but people who had been slaves who bought their freedom, or they won their freedom and came down to the Caribbean and came down to Jamaica to even give them more education about how they could walk in liberty. And they eventually did. So they have some very, very strong Christians there in Jamaica. And they have some other people just like here who have been, I guess, for whatever reason, their family structure wasn't strong, and they became more into drugs. So you have this one group of people who are very strong Christians. And you have this other group of people, mostly boys and young men, who are drug addicts. And then they develop some other religions in Jamaica too. The one that goes with the music, the new type of music they have, but they also have the strong Christians too. So it's not completely strong Christian, because I was ministering to the children who were poor, and their fathers had been into drugs, and their mothers also doing the same thing, drugs. But there was the other strong Christian Jamaicans who had learned how to have liberty, but they didn't know how to have government. So that was the thing I was trying to teach them, starting with the family. Before I left there, our families became strong. The people were marrying, and they were working together to stay married and to raise their children correctly. And so that's a foundation for our government. I mean, you know, for our government and their government. And they're still needing to have that family government go up into the character of the people, but it takes a while. Did I answer your question?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Okay. So, and I know that one of your passions is helping individuals to learn how to read so that they can read the Bible. And you've taken that passion and you've pursued it by creating videos for missionaries and then also through Biblical Classical Community. Would you like to share about your course that you're offering on Biblical Classical Community to Christian homeschool families and what sets it apart from other courses that teach reading and spelling?
It uses the phonograms to hear the sounds of the letters, are they letter? And it's very important to me because it teaches you how to think. And memorization is important to learn how to memorize the phonogram sounds, the sounds of the letters. But once you learn how to memorize those, or at least most of them, you use them as tools. They become like tools in your mind. And you learn how to put those different sounds together in order, starting from left going to the right, which is very important because we read going from left to going to right. You learn how to write those and how to think about how they sound and to put those sounds together. And it's very, very much fun to put the three sounds together or the four sounds or the two sounds, whatever, together and have a word. It's fantastic to think about because you don't have to memorize all the words. You just memorize the sounds. In Jamaica, it was fantastic. I had my first year, I had five students there. And one was a man and four were women. And one lady, she wanted to be a teacher. They're all Jamaicans. One was an American. The other four were Jamaicans. She wanted to be a teacher. Her name was Pam. And she lived in Kingston. She was youth of the mission for, I think, about 7 years before she came to my school and teaching teachers. She had a problem because she had a lisp and she didn't speak plainly. And so, but her heart's desire was so strong to teach children because she had such a heart for children. And she felt like the Lord was saying, this is where you need to start to make Jamaica great. You start with the children. And I thought so too. So, but I didn't have any problem teaching there. Other people said, well, you can't teach her to be a teacher. She doesn't speak correctly. I used the phonograms to teach her how to speak. So just as I was teaching the rest of them, how the rest of the teachers, I taught her really strongly because, you know, when you teach the phonogram sounds, you're teaching also how to hold your mouth, how to hold your lips. And that some of the sounds are whispering sounds. Some of the sounds are throat sounds. Some of the sounds are voice sounds. And that was delightful for her to hear. And so I told her about where you put your tongue in. I got a mirror so she could look to see where to put her tongue. By the end of our school year, she was able to speak correctly, even with the tongue problem she had, the lisp problem she had from before. And now when you listen to her speak, oh my goodness, she speaks better than I do. And that was a wonderful opportunity. And then she was able to go in the classroom and share from her heart, you know, the things that she learned about thinking and reading and writing to the children. And they really learned. They really learned. So another thing that's different is in principal approach, we're all, even if we do the same subject, we're going to give the subject with our experience, with our individuality, with the things that we know that we've learned. And it could be a little different. It could be the same, but we're going to express it in a little bit different way. So I know that someone said to me, they said, well, there's professionals that teach, you know, how to teach phonogram sounds and how to read and how to write. And I said, well, officially, I'm not a professional. I'm just a missionary. But I know that I've heard teachers and parents say they didn't understand how to do it. And so my heart's desire is to really show the joy of doing it and how to do it and make it easy. And I'm still working on it. I think my videos are a good start, but I'm still working, trying to improve myself. But if there's anybody that has a question about what I'm doing on the videos, I'm glad to make another video to show it or to, just to talk to them about it.
Praise God. I think that's such a great testimony about the lady because it goes to show that we are designed to be able to grow and change. And if you have the right content and the right methodology, then it's doable. And it's exciting to hear about how she was able to take that and go and impact the children over there like that.
And you know what else? She heard the Lord. The Lord really did want her to teach, and she's doing that.
Yeah. And even though she maybe had some doubts in the beginning, or maybe she didn't, maybe she just fully plunged in with faith and figured God was going to work it out somehow for her to be able to do that. And he did.
Lots of people told her she couldn't do it, but she did. She's my example. And she's a good example because it worked, but it works for every child. We didn't have any children in our Jamaican classes who have problems with drugs at home. Their, you know, parents are smoking marijuana and they arguing, and some are good Christians, some are not. They've had all these activities going on at home, but when they came to class and they were learning the phonograms, none of them went away without learning how to read the words and how to write the words. And even some of them learned how to read more Bible, some of them learned how to read less Bible, but they all did better and they all learned.
And was this in reference to speaking English and reading in English?
Yes, because Jamaica's official language is English. And actually, I wasn't teaching the sounds of the Queen's English, because some of the sounds of the Queen's English is different. The phonograms, I should say, are different from American English, but they want to learn American English, so I was okay. But yes, this was the sounds that they learned, and they put them together, and they were just thrilled that they didn't have to memorize all the words, that just memorize the sounds and put those sounds together to be able to read all the words.
And you were talking with us before we started to record about how they read the King James Bible, or that's what they learned on, and what else did you have to share about that?
They love the King James Bible because that's the Bible that the Moravians brought over to them. That's the Bible that, with the sounds of the New English, it's just English from Europe, not English from America. But they love those sounds, and that's what their Bible brought forth their language. The Bible, whenever you write the Bible, even in Wycliffe's time, is the one who defines the language. And so the King James Bible defined the way they spoke in Jamaica with the English words. And so they use the English words to read the Bible, plus they use them to, you know, in all their life. But they do have another language there they call Kakwa. It's like an English, but it has different definitions to the English words. The way that was made is because a lot of times they were wanting to hide what they were doing from their masters when they were slaves. And so they changed the English words meanings. But and as time has passed, they actually changed the way the word sounds from time to time. But you can kind of hear the English version of their Kakwa. But that they also are supposed to learn English. And so it turns out that when the four-year-old comes into the preschool, we're actually teaching them a second language. And so we're teaching them, they know how to speak their home language, which is Kakwa, and they are learning how to speak the country's language, which is English. You know, United States used to have authority to have just one language too, and then we changed it to all these different languages. But tell you the truth, to learn one language that the whole nation knows, and it's good for Jamaica because the Kakwa is not a written language, it's different in different places in Jamaica. So sometimes they communicate with themselves, but they all learned how to speak, you know, regular English. So it's important for a nation to be able to communicate with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that United States needs to learn.
Yeah, I agree. Now, over in Jamaica, are they utilizing Webster's 1828 Dictionary of the English Language at all? Do you know?
I brought it in. They were using England's dictionary. I forgot the name of the dictionary, but the popular dictionary from England. But I brought in the Webster's 1828 because I was teaching the teachers how to research using, you know, the word list, and you use the word list for spelling list as well. So our school was using Webster's 1828, and I left several 1828 dictionaries there.
I think it's exciting to learn about their history. Thank you so much for sharing your experience and what you know about their providential history with us. So, yeah, we're glad to have you here to help everybody learn about it, because I don't know of a resource that's out there that teaches on it at all. So, and I think it's important for other people to understand that Principal Proach isn't only about America, but that it's applicable to any nation, and that God's hand is involved in the lives of all people and all nations.
You know why that's true? Because when you look at it, when you think about it, the Pilgrims were not Americans.
Mm-hmm.
When they came in. And they're the ones, this is where we are getting our inspiration from. They had the Reformation with the Bible there in England, of course, and they want to live out the liberty the way they saw it in being taught in the Bible, but they weren't Americans.
That's
what I told the Jamaicans. And they also have the same history as the United States in that, you know, they're influenced by England. So England had a certain amount of liberty. You know, I know there was a lot of slavery, a lot of tyranny with the kings and all, but they still had some liberty because of Wycliffe and Tyndale, and of course what Luther did with the Bible. They had some understanding that other parts of Europe and Oriental and of course South America, well, Africa and all, they didn't have. But anyways, and so they were developing it there, and then they brought it over, goes into geography, huh? They brought it over to the New World, and part of the New World was the Caribbean. And so this is what I told them. When they looked at the red books, they said, why do we want to learn American history? And I was saying, because it's not really American history. It's these people who brought the history that we're studying. They were actually from England originally, and then also from Holland. Mm-hmm. I said, they were just like you, different.
Janet Sue, as we wrap up, there's a lot of concerning things going on in the world, and there are a lot of people who are worrying and feeling discouraged. So what message of encouragement do you have for Christian homeschooling families, especially those who are looking to keep the biblical worldview involved in every single subject of what they're teaching their children?
There was a lot of, when you look back there at what kind of world it was whenever Jesus was born, when the Romans were taken over, they were a lot of tyranny going on then. And Jesus was born into a world that's kind of similar to what we're going through, but just different because, you know, culture is different and all. But was certainly a lot of taxes, a lot of people being hurt, a lot of sexual trafficking in their way going on in those days, which we didn't think about until these days we're thinking about it. But anyways, a lot of these things were going on. It's just evil, a lot of evil, darkness. But as people started coming to know what Christ brought them, you know, understood the Beatitudes and understood them going back to the Ten Commandments, going back, we understand that's the truth. And so we have to continue to do everything we can to learn the truth and then live the truth as much as we can. And as we do that, we pray. So we're looking at struggles. We're looking at hard times. We could get upset about it, and we do. But the idea is to continue to stay the truth. The Bible has the most of it. And then we have the history we're learning about the truth. And then to pray, give it to the Lord. And guess what? God's going to talk to you. He's going to say to you to do. He's going to give you a direction. And if you don't hear it at first, you keep praying, you keep reading the scriptures, and God's going to work in you. And that's going to be, we can't do everything. We can only do a little bit, and God's going to give you the little bit that he wants you to do. First thing, of course, is to raise your family in the truth and to be patriotic, to honor God in our nation. But through that, God's going to give you a direction. And that's what I've been doing. This is my direction. And I'm very thankful to come to know you, Brian and Heather, so that I can join with you to see what God's going to do. And but I think it was God's leading. And it was leading out of me being very upset about the world. So teaching our children is one thing we can do to change the world. Because when you teach your child, it doesn't just affect your house. It doesn't just affect your community. Teaching your child, God can use your child to affect the whole wide world. And yeah. So you don't know. You know, it says in Jeremiah that God has a plan for each person and a future and a hope. And he does. We just have to figure out how that's going to work in each child's life.
That's so good. Thank you for all of those words. That's so good. Well, Janet Sue, thank you for joining us for this podcast. We've learned a lot from you, and I trust that other people are as well who listen. We hope to have you back sometime soon.
Thank you very much. And like I said, I'm very thankful to be a part of our group together.
We're thankful for you, too.
As always, if you're looking for additional resources or support, you can visit our website at principalacademy.com, check out our shop and our blog, and you can also find us on Facebook at Christian Homeschooling with Bible Principles, also on Instagram under Principal Academy. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Well, this is Heather Hall.
And this is Brian Hall.
For Christ and His glory.